From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Thousands of people have died so far in the massacre carried out by the terrorist group Hamas against Israel and Israel's retaliation against Hamas in Gaza, with many Palestinian civilian casualties as a result of that campaign. It's the worst outbreak of violence in the region in decades, and it shows no signs of slowing down. At this point, the center of the war is the Gaza Strip, where about 2 million people live. It's been under the control of Hamas since 2007, and it's been under a blockade by Israel and Egypt for about as long. But hostilities escalated dramatically after Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th with thousands of rockets and militants. Israel responded by declaring war, and since then it's dropped thousands of bombs on Gaza and has warned a major ground assault is imminent. Meanwhile, the people in Gaza face a humanitarian crisis, cut off from food, water, power, and medicine. And the war has reverberated around the world, including here in Illinois, where a 6-year-old Palestinian-American boy was stabbed to death in his home in Plainfield Township, and his mother critically wounded. Police say the man charged with murder and hate crimes in the attack, their elderly landlord, was motivated by what happened in Israel and Gaza. This is a rapidly developing situation, one with decades, if not centuries, of context behind it. And in order to get a better understanding of what's happening and what the international implications of the war are, we wanted to talk with some Illinois-based experts about it. In this tumultuous geopolitical time, we've checked in occasionally with Ian Kelly, the ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. He began his career in the U.S. Foreign Service in the last years of the Soviet Union. He held a variety of high-level roles in the U.S. State Department and served as the department's spokesman under then-Secretary Hillary Clinton. From 2010 to 2013, he was U.S. Ambassador to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And we've talked with him about the war on Ukraine previously on the program. Today, he's joining us to help us make sense of the state of affairs in Israel and the Gaza Strip. Ambassador Kelly, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Jessica Vivian, a visiting assistant professor in political science at Monmouth College, a liberal arts college in Warren County in the western part of the state. She's worked for the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development in Geneva, Switzerland, and she was a consultant for the United Nations before moving into the world of teaching. Professor Vivian, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Listeners, in order to make our schedules meet, we taped our conversation Tuesday afternoon. Since then, there's been an explosion at a medical complex in Gaza, which has killed hundreds of people and injured hundreds more. You'll hear one of our guests refer to collateral damage as our conversation goes on, and it's worth noting that the source of the blast is still in dispute. Officials in Gaza and in Israel have blamed each other, and as we're going to air Wednesday morning, neither side's claims have been independently verified. Meanwhile, President Biden, this morning, Illinois time, mentioned the blast during some remarks in Israel after a day of meetings with several Israeli leaders.
The United States unequivocally stands for the protection of civilian life during conflict, and I grieve, I truly grieve for the families were killed or wounded by this tragedy.
With all that said, we are not taking calls because, again, this conversation is on tape. We sent out a message to our texting group about this Tuesday morning, and we'll be sharing some of what the members of our group had to say as we go on. All right, Professor Vivian, I mentioned this is a war with decades of context behind it. And one of our listeners, Anne in Urbana, said, "I see this in some ways as a clash between two histories." And we can come back to the Hamas attack on Israel, but what do you see as the biggest contributing factors to this war breaking out?
Well, I think we have to look at, we have to question why Hamas would undertake this horrific terrorist attack. It was a terrorist attack. It was, you can't look at Hamas as a state actor. Essentially, they are not big enough to be a state actor. They are controlling the Gaza Strip, but there have not been elections since 2000. They are a terrorist. They are a terrorist organization, and they're using terrorist tactics. What terrorism seeks to do is to provoke disproportionate attacks so that their cause develops sympathy. So this attack has been at least a year, more than that, in the planning, and the people in charge of planning the attack had to have specifically told the people involved to undertake horrific terrorist actions. Why would they do that? Because they weren't going for a military goal. They were going, their goal was to provoke disproportionate retaliation against Gaza Strip. And most of the people living in Gaza are not involved with Hamas.
You know, the metaphor I've heard used here is a sports metaphor, drawing the foul, right? You do something intentionally
exactly.
to try and provoke your opponent. Yeah.
Exactly right. So they're looking, they see what's happening recently in this Israel-Palestine situation is that the world's attention has been kind of fading away from the Palestinian cause. You had the Arab states sort of organized around supporting Palestinians. They've been losing interest to some extent. And so when that happens, when you have a situation approaching peace, or at least peaceful relations developing, a terrorist technique is to try to spoil that peace, to try to provoke the other side, to try to make both sides enraged. And that's good for the terrorist cause. It's, you know, their interest is not in peace. Their interest is in maintaining power.
Ambassador Kelly, I'd like to bring you into the conversation now. Can you talk, historically speaking, what sort of support has Israel gotten from Western nations, particularly the United States?
Well, the United States, of course, has been, I think, the Israel's biggest supporter, both politically and militarily, really going back to President Truman, you know, who was the first American president to recognize Israel, and of course during the Cold War, the conflict between Israel and the Arab states was in many ways a kind of a proxy war. Between Washington and Moscow, and Moscow, of course, supported the Arab states like Egypt and Syria and Iraq, and they had a form of socialist government. So it was part of the Cold War conflict. I mean, obviously, we're in a very different situation now, where Israel has been able to establish diplomatic relations with a number of those countries like Egypt and Jordan. And I think that one of the things driving this situation, I agree with Professor Vivian that that Hamas made this decision to try and provoke Israel to draw attention to the plight of the Palestinians. But I think another motive here is the growing ties between Israel and the Gulf states through the Abraham Accords, and I think even more concerning to the Palestinians are the warming of relations and perhaps even the recognition, mutual recognition, with Saudi Arabia. So I think that Hamas is starting to see the tide turning against it, with Arab states kind of falling off. In the wars in 67 and 73, of course, were the Palestinians were backed by the Arab states. And I think that you have to look at Iran. There would be no militant wing of Hamas if it weren't for Iran. And of course, Iran sees this within its own conflict with the Shia states in the Gulf and with Saudi Arabia. So another factor here, I think, is an attempt to torpedo this potentially historic recognition by Saudi Arabia of Israel. And of course, Saudi Arabia sees this as part of their own conflict with the Shiites of Iran. So there is a big international component to this.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. And Professor Vivian, maybe you can talk on that, because I heard someone else describe Hamas as Iran's weakest proxy in the region. There are others, certainly, and that Israel really has to show that it cannot let this sort of attack slide, and that past and future agreements with other powers in the region are really dependent on Israel showing itself to be a functioning state with a competent military. What do you think of that?
Okay, exactly. Yes, there's no question that Israel cannot not respond to this. Ideally, it will respond with restraint and by targeting and by reducing or minimizing civilian casualties, so that it will not do what Hamas wants it to do, right? So that's one side. But the question of Iran, yes, is a very important one. And Iran supports Hamas. There's been conflicting reports about whether Iran knew of this attack in advance or approved of it. President Biden, I believe yesterday, said that intelligence did not at this point support that. But there's also, of course, Hezbollah in the north. And if this were coordinated, we still don't know if Iran, who is also allied and is closer allies with Hezbollah, if they were to coordinate an attack from Hezbollah as well, this could potentially be a very serious situation for Israel. And that is why President Biden ordered the aircraft carriers into the region. It's a signal to Iran and to Hezbollah that further action will be responded to. So at the moment, it looks like it's a terrorist attack by Hamas trying to, as Ambassador Kelly says, spoil the warming relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. It's not out of the question that it is something more serious, and that Iran is more active participant in this than we know at this time.
Ambassador Kelly, we just heard Professor Vivian a moment ago talk about hoping that Israel has a proportionate response in Gaza. And I do want to ask you about the human effect of what's happening there, because several organizations have been describing it as a humanitarian crisis. You know, first of all, is there a way out for the millions of people in that region? And is there, I guess, any hope for a humanitarian aid at all, and you know, how that might worsen the state of affairs in the region?
Yeah, of course, there's a lot of moving parts in this. It's not just a matter of Israel lifting their blockade. There's also the factor of Egypt, and they haven't really opened up the borders. There is kind of a trickle of people coming out and a trickle of aid coming in. And I think that sort of the main objective, kind of the main immediate objective of Antony Blinken's visit to the region, both to Israel and to several of the Arab states, was to try and to try and take off the table this horrifying scenario of hundreds of thousands of civilians being trapped in the Gaza Strip. And a big part of this would be the agreement of Egypt to allow civilians, refugees to come out and allow the aid to come in. And from what I've heard recently, the secretary was quite successful in getting these various players to allow this kind of outlet, and you know, opening up the Gaza Strip to humanitarian aid as well. And that is, I mean, it is something that is really in the interests of Israel as well, to try and get as many of these these Gazans out of harm's way. Hamas is mostly in the north of Gaza. Get them down into the south and into, and actually into Egypt, to take them out of the equation. Because, as Professor Vivian said, I think this is really one of the top goals of Hamas, is to provoke Israel into some of these horrific collateral damage, you might call it, of civilians under the rubble, or civilians who are unable to escape or even get food or medicine. So it is in Israel's interest that the U.S. broker some kind of arrangement that would take care of these innocent refugees.
Yeah. All right, we need to take a break on the program. When we continue, more with Ambassador Ian Kelly. He is currently ambassador in residence at Northwestern University, former official with the U.S. State Department, and also Jessica Vivian, a professor in political science at Monmouth College. She previously has done work with the United Nations. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the ongoing situation in Israel after Hamas's massacre of more than 1,000, many hundreds of Israeli citizens, as well as Americans, and taking many more and taking more hostage into Gaza, and then Israel's retaliation, its attacks on Hamas in Gaza, with many Palestinian civilian casualties as a result of that campaign. We taped this conversation on Tuesday afternoon. Obviously, this is a fast-moving situation, so events may overtake part of what we're saying, but we're current as to when we are taping this. Because of that, we're not taking calls live during our program today, but we do love hearing from you, and you can communicate with us in our texting group by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We did send a message out before we taped this. Stephen in Champaign said, "I think this is a disaster of a situation. The civilians are being used as bargaining chips, and it will not end well, and the next generation of hatred will be born. Ultimately, what you have is the Iraq War all over again, setting and outcomes, urban warfare that will cause suffering for people who just want to live their lives in peace." And I guess, Professor Vivian, maybe you can speak to that. You know, I've heard someone else describe Hamas as essentially taking the people of Gaza hostage. But the people will suffer as Israel attempts to end Hamas in Gaza. How do you draw those distinctions?
That's a really good point. And another way to think of it is that Hamas is willing to sacrifice the population of Gaza for their ultimate aims. Again, we know what they want, and we have to try to figure out a way not to give it to them. I mean, the attacks were horrific. They were designed to enrage people, make people emotional, provoke a disproportionate attack. Why? Because if there is all-out war in the Gaza Strip against 2 million, you know, 98% of those are innocent civilians. If there's all-out war, and if we manage to wipe out every single Hamas fighter, they'll come back. Somebody else will come back if that's the way we do it. What's the answer? There has to be a better way. And now they can have narrowly targeted attacks. They can be sure to get humanitarian aid in there. They can establish humanitarian corridors. They can explicitly try to minimize the damage. We also have the interests of neighboring states. What we don't want to do is to change public opinion in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, in other Arab countries, to be anti-Israeli to the degree they used to be. The other thing is that it's possible that this situation might end up with something unanticipated. It might be that Prime Minister Netanyahu will lose considerable support. His strategy has been to be very aggressive on the Palestinian question, with the argument that this will keep Israel safe. He did not keep Israel safe. So there might be, you know, not immediately, but over a period of time, a sort of reorientation within Israel that would avoid the kind of generational injury and hatred and conflict that your listener is concerned about. So it's not inevitable. I don't think it's inevitable. I think it's certainly possible, but there are ways that it might go in a better direction.
I want to ask a little about how Americans are responding to this, Ambassador Kelly. And I wonder, you know, we've seen this small but growing element on the left that seems to not think Israel has a right to exist. You're on a campus. I wonder if you've seen that there. And if not, then you can just speak more broadly, maybe just about the tensions and divisions among Americans and the American government in particular, as we've seen this continue to unfold.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think that obviously we have a very polarized political situation now. And I think at either ends of the spectrum, you have seen you know, voices who are siding with an organization, either directly or indirectly, trying to justify their actions. And then you also have extremes on the, so that would be on the left. On the right, you hear voices calling on Israel to use disproportionate force to pursue the vision of this present Likud government, or really creating a one-state solution for the Palestinians who live in the occupied areas. And obviously that is not the kind of rhetorical or political situation which is going to lend itself to any kind of negotiated solution. I would really hope that Secretary Blinken, who's in the region now, and then President Biden tomorrow when he arrives, that we see this terrible situation, this tremendous challenge, as an opportunity to revive some sort of negotiating process that has completely collapsed. For decades, there was a process in place. You know, the Oslo Accords, the Oslo process, the quartet, which actually included Russia, as well as Europe and the United States. But there seems to have been, what has fallen off the agenda is this idea of a two-state solution. And I think the majority of our Israelis believe that that is the only answer here, that trying to annex more and more territory, to occupy more and more territory, only leads to perpetuating the conflict. I'm not sure how that can be done. I don't think this can just be, you know, a West mediated solution, as Oslo and the quartet was. We really have to have the neighbors of Israel and the Palestinian territories to be involved, to really, I think, to come up with a solution that has more buy-in with the whole region, rather than trying to impose something from the West. I mean, that's kind of an optimistic way of looking at this, that maybe this could start a peace process again. It's kind of hard for me to see how Mr. Netanyahu could lead such a process, but as Professor Vivian says, that he may already be politically damaged by his failure to to see this coming and respond quickly to it.
Yeah, no, that's such a great, and I'm really glad you brought up that idea of the two-state solution. And I've been thinking, as I've been following the news of this, what the heck happened to that? And Professor Vivian, maybe you can speak to that a little bit about, I mean, this is, you know, I remember when I'm a Generation X person, when I was coming up, there was, you know, nonviolent resistance among the Palestinians. There was seemingly some gradual diplomatic process. What happened? Why did that so completely seem to fall off of the ambitions of so many world powers?
The two-state solution, it's still, as far as I know, the official policy of the United States government, that is what we are advocating. In recent years, it has seemed more and more impractical. Part of the reason for that, well, you have the Netanyahu government expanding into the West Bank, allowing Israeli settlers into the West Bank. This is a crisis for Palestinians who see their claim on the West Bank to negotiated borders as being infringed upon, and they have no defense against that. At the same time, you have a conflict between the Palestinian Authority, Fatah, and Hamas. So Hamas, there is actually a literal hot war between Hamas and Fatah, of the Palestinian Authority. So Hamas took over government of the Gaza by force. They technically won an election. They were, I believe, 44%, something like that. So you have conflict between two representatives of the Palestinians. So you don't have the Palestinians acting with one voice. This is going to make negotiation difficult. At the same time, you have Netanyahu, to some degree, fostering that, to some degree, liking to see the Palestinians divided. If the Palestinians are divided, there's nobody to negotiate with. There's no way to get them to an independent country. And to somebody who does not want to see an independent Palestinian state on their border, that suits them. Is the two-state solution dead? It could turn around. As Ambassador Kelly says, there might be openings for negotiation. I believe President Biden is meeting with the Palestinian Authority, as well as Jordan and Israel, Egypt. So something might get going. Hamas is definitely not going to be a party of that. Hamas, in their platform, denies the right of Israel to exist. Their earlier platforms were explicitly genocidal against Israelis. So Hamas needs to go. If Hamas goes, there might be a way forward.
Ambassador Kelly, I'm wondering if you can put this in the broader Hamas's action here in the broader context of global jihad, right? I think the foreign policy conversation, such as it is in America, given the limited attention span that many Americans have for those conversations, it's really lately focused on, you know, what you might call great power conflict, Russia and China. And we haven't really heard as much about global jihad, at least not since ISIS collapsed 6 or 7 years ago. Do you see this event serving as a wake-up call, not just for Israel, but for other countries in the West that might be targets of jihadist groups, including America?
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it in that framework of jihadism necessarily. I think that if you look at the international, you know, as the Soviets used to say, balance or correlation of forces, I think what you have is it's really, I think, more in kind of the great power context, as you said, where it's the great powers that who kind of set the rules or I think probably a better way to put it is there are great powers now who really didn't like the post-Cold War rules that were set by Europe and by the United States. And so you see a more of a maximalist approach to issues. So the Russian Federation doesn't think that democratically Western-oriented Ukraine has a right to exist, and so they're using force to impose that. Hamas consistently, they've never said that Israel has a right to exist. And Iran has said that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. And then, of course, China wants to erase the political sovereignty of Taiwan. So you have this correlation of forces that are either directly supporting, in the case of Iran, what's going on in Israel and Gaza, or is indirectly supporting it in terms of, if you look at Russia, they love the fact that the United States is completely distracted now from what's going on in Ukraine. So you have this kind of condominium among these revisionist powers or maximalist powers that want to use force to rewrite borders, and that goes completely counter to the post-Cold War consensus, which was these have to be resolved by negotiations, by multilateralism, so we see a real concerted effort to do away with this kind of consensus, unfortunately.
Well, this is certainly a conversation we are going to be returning to ahead on the 21st show as we continue to watch this tragedy unfold in the Middle East. Ambassador Ian Kelly is ambassador in residence at Northwestern University. Jessica Vivian is visiting assistant professor in political science at Monmouth College. Thank you both so much for being with us and sharing your expertise with us on the 21st show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
I want to mention again that conversation was recorded Tuesday afternoon before we knew about the explosion at a hospital in Gaza, the source of which is still in dispute. The Israeli Defense Forces say it was a terrorist group affiliated with Hamas that had a rocket that went wrong and blew up the hospital. Health authorities in Gaza are saying it was an Israeli bomb that blew up the hospital. Neither of those claims have been independently verified, as we are going to air Wednesday morning. We are planning additional conversations on what's happening in the Middle East as developments continue to unfold there. We would love to hear what you want to talk about with that. So send an email to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st Show. Stay with us.